It's as if Miss MacLeady's words are spoken underwater. I can scarcely make sense of them, and a cold dread tightens in my stomach. I run for the stairs and take them two at a time, Felicity calling my name and Miss MacLeady demanding order. When I reach our room, completely out of breath, Anne is sitting on her bed wearing her drab brown travelling suit and modest wool hat. She makes a neat pile of her halfpenny papers and the fashion magazine Felicity handed down. The programme for Macbeth sits on top. Bridget tucks the last of Anne's clothes into her suitcase. "Bridget," I pant, "could I have a moment with Anne?"
"All right, then," Bridget says, sniffling. "Close the case proper. And don't forget your gloves, dearie."
Our housekeeper bustles past me, dabbing at her moist eyes with a handkerchief. It's just Anne and me. "Tell me it's a lie," I say. Anne closes her case and sets it on the floor at her feet. "I left you the halfpenny papers. Something to remember me by."
"You can't go with them. You've a position in Mr. Katz's company waiting for you. The world stages."
Anguish shows on Anne's face.
"No, that was for Nan Washbrad, whose beauty speaks for itself. Not Anne Bradshaw. The girl they want doesn't exist. Not really."
I throw her case onto the bed, open it up and start unpacking it.
"Then we'll find a way. We'll make it work with the magic."
Anne puts her hand on mine, stopping me.
"Don't you see, Gemma? It would never work. Not forever. I can't be who they want me to be."
"Then be someone else. Be yourself."
"Not good enough."
She twists her gloves in her hands, crumpling them into a ball and straightening them out again.
"That's why I sent the letter, asking them to come for me."
I think back to the night of Anne's audition and the letter in her hands, the one she had so much trouble posting. She never meant to go with Lily Trimble and Mr. Katz. I sink onto her bed. Her case rests between us. She puts her things back in and latches it shut.
"Tell me, then, what was all that trouble for?"
I bite the words off.
"I'm sorry, Gemma." She tries to touch me, but I shrink away. "If I leave now, I can remember that day as it was. I can always believe that I could have done it. But if I take that chance, if I go to them as myself and fail, I couldn't bear it."
Felicity bursts through the door and blocks it.
"Don't you worry, Anne. I won't let them take you."
Anne pulls on her gloves and grabs the handle of her case.
"Step aside, please."
Fee opens her mouth in protest.
"But let her go, Fee."
I want to kick Anne for not trying, for giving up on herself and on us. Anne's face falls into a well-trained mask that betrays no emotion. She might use that talent to thrill audiences from the world stages. Instead, she will use it to ease into the lives of her cousins so seamlessly that it will be as if she has never existed at all. And I see now that she might have made a good magician as well as an actress, for she knows how to make herself disappear. Suitcase in hand, Anne marches down the stairs for the last time. Her shoulders are straight and her back is stiff, but her eyes are blank. She's even begun to walk like a governess. Down the hall I can hear the phonograph playing, MacLeady putting the girls through their careful paces. Mrs. Wharton waits at the bottom of the stairs with Mrs. Nightwing and Bridget. Mrs. Wharton wears a confection of a dress, beaded and feathered and overwrought.
"Ah, here's our Annie now. I was just telling Mrs. Nightwing how fond I know you'll become of our house in the country. Mr. Wharton and I have named it Balmoral Spring, as Balmoral is so dear to Her Majesty."
"What a ridiculous name for a country house," Felicity mutters. "Have they never spent a spring at Balmoral? It makes one long for English winters." Mrs. Wharton chatters on about the nuisance of maintaining a country estate in the proper style and how her days are made a ruin by constantly keeping after the servants. Bridget gives Anne a handkerchief, though she's the one who could use one.
"No shame in service," she says, cupping Anne's chin tenderly. "You remember your old Bridget."
"Goodbye, Anne," Felicity says. "It won't be the same without you." Anne turns to me. I know she's waiting for some hint of kindness, a kiss, an embrace, even a smile, but I can't muster any of it.
"You'll make a fine governess."
My words are like a slap.
"I know," she answers, a slap of her own.
The girls crowd the foyer. They sniffle and make a fuss, as they never did while Anne was here and it might have mattered. I can't bear it,
so I slink off to the great hall and peek out from behind the drapes as Anne and her sudden admirers step outside. A footman secures Anne's case, and after tending to Mrs. Wharton, he helps Anne into the carriage. She pokes her head out the window, holding fast to her one good hat. I could rush after her, give her a kiss on the cheek, send her off with a fond farewell. I could. It would mean the world to her. But I can't make my feet move. Just say a proper goodbye, Gemma, that's all. The reins are snapped, the horses kick up dust. The carriage jolts as it makes the turn around the drive and toward the road. It grows smaller and smaller till it's nothing more than a dark speck moving away. Goodbye, I whisper at last, when it no longer matters and there is no one to hear it but the window.